Talking Records Podcast. Talking Records Podcast. Talking Records Podcast. We talk about our favorite records. Talking Records Podcast. We're so glad you tuned in. Thank you all for listening. You showed up to the right place. Jed and his friends dive deep and analyze the records we have grown to love. We'll tell you how we found the band, then give you a track by track breakdown of all songs. So grab your favorite beverage and pull up a seat. Today we'll look at another record in its entirety.
Welcome to Talking Records. My name is Jed, and you're listening to a podcast devoted to rounding up all the bits of information on an album and presenting it all right here. Stories. It's all about the stories and interesting things that go into making these albums we've been enjoying for years. I get especially excited when an album has a fascinating backstory, such as today's episode on Sludgeworth's Losers of the Year. I am joined today by my good friend and bandmate, Mr. Jay Prozak. How's it going, Jay?
It's going great, Jed. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. In a little bit, we're going to have a couple of the guys from the band come on and tell us about the record. But before we do that, Jay, I want to talk a little bit about this record, a little bit about how I got into it, and a little bit about how you got into it.
Certainly.
And then we'll invite the guys on.
Awesome.
A little history first. Based out of Chicago, Sludgeworth is a band that released some music over its very brief existence, and then they eventually parted ways. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about that when we talk to the guys, but they had this record, you know, that came out on Lookout Records, but it was like one of those records that I always remember hearing about, you know, but not really ever being able to track down, right? Because it had been released, and then years and years and years and years and years had passed. Well, luckily, recently, Toby Jegg from Red Scare was able to get his hands on this thing and re-release it. So the record is now available through Red Scare. You can hear it on Spotify and Apple and all that stuff. And so now it's very readily available. So it's kind of a cool story, like a long story about an album, you know, finally being available. I want to know, Jay, like, how did you get into Sludgeworth? How did you find out about this record? And what does the record mean to you?
So I found out about Sludgeworth. It was the spring of 1996. Wow. And I was out in Boston hanging out with a friend of mine through my BMX biking days. We were just talking music, and he said, hey, you should check out a couple bands. And one of them was a band called Sludgeworth. He said, he told me he knew I was a huge Screeching Weasel fan. And he said one of the members of Screeching Weasel was in this band Sludgeworth, and I checked it out. He played it for me, and I thought it was pretty awesome, and I immediately tracked down the CD, and I think I ordered it straight from Lookout. See, back then, used to just call Lookout Records on the phone and you could talk and chill and hang out and order stuff. So I got the record very shortly after hearing it. And I just fell for it. At the time, I didn't really know, say, like, the band members so much. I hadn't gotten to that point in music where I, like, analyzed everything. It was just, it was music, and it had something to do with this other band that I loved. And it was something kind of completely different. It's been in my collection since 96, and I have listened to this record repeatedly and consistently ever since. Yeah, I don't know. I guess learning, you know, watching Dan Vapid from that point on, getting the Riverdales and eventually the Mopes and the Methadones, and, you know, this record,
very healthy kind of body of work.
This record just made more and more sense over, you know, over time. But I guess I never really thought about it too much, as far as it not being out there and being out of print, right, and all that, because it's just kind of been with me.
Because you've always had it.
Been with me the whole time, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
which is funny, because someone like me, I didn't. I mean, it was hard to get my hands on it. I mean, I could have asked you, I guess, but
you didn't know.
I didn't know, yeah. But so what was it about Sludgeworth that you fell for? What drew you in? What about this music really spoke to you?
it's ultra catchy. There's like a lyrical aspect where you just kind of you connect. I connected to it. There's kind of like what I got out of Screeching Weasel, and probably has something to do with the way Dan presents himself in music. I found a connect musically, lyrically, time in life, and it just, I don't know. It was, I guess, looking back, this was one of the albums that was earlier in my coming into punk rock. You tend to really get attached when you have a smaller collection of music because you're spending more
in
time.
In those formative years, yeah.
Maybe it was kind of like a little hidden treasure too. I had the record, it was there. I can't really pinpoint exactly what it is, but there's kind of an epic feel to these songs. And, you know, when you get stuff like Angry Man and things are getting we're a little more offbeat, that traditional pop sound.
A little darker, maybe even a little bit more serious. I mean, I know Screeching Weasel had some serious stuff, but when I heard Sludgeworth, one of the things that I noticed right away was it seemed a little bit more straightforward.
To me, it feels epic. Like, as soon as you pop it in, you got Wasted Away. You know, right out of the gate, it's an encompassing feeling. It's something that just grabbed me and it's been there.
Yeah, and then it's followed up by Someday, which is such an awesome song. I love the guitar in that.
Yeah, and it's interesting. All the melodies that are going, you know, there's so much background guitar and melodies and counter melodies. And I mean, one time, you know, you're singing along to the lyrics and you're humming along to the guitars. You're maybe hear things that you didn't hear. I guess I realized this record been an influence in my own writing, you know, without really, maybe even more so in later life. And yeah, it kind of has a grown-up feeling that came out from a bunch of kids, you know.
I know. You got to remember that they were really young when they put this out.
Yeah, I know. I remember the day very, very clearly when my friend Frank was like, hey, check this out. And I was just like, never heard of it. Oh, shit, this is awesome. I feel like Dan Vapid wasn't a, you know, he wasn't quite the figurehead he was, became, at least maybe not in that national and international sense. I don't know what else to say about it other than it's an amazing record and it's super, super exciting that it is coming out on vinyl. It's getting rebirth.
Yeah.
On an interesting note, Toby, who put the record out, I I got to hang out with Toby on release day of Sludgeworth's album on Redskin.
Oh, nice. Did you guys listen to it?
He was watching soccer. I'm not a big sports fan, but I hung out in his house and we watched soccer and while he was probably typing away on his laptop trying to promote this record.
Doing business, yeah. Well, Jay, I am envious of you for the fact that you have a history with this record. I mean, this record has been on your person, in your psyche, since 96. And so that's a pretty special thing. It's amazing that we're all getting this vinyl now. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that have heard Sludgeworth and have listened to the music and stuff. But to have that history like you do is pretty neat. I had heard of Sludgeworth, probably from you, but I had never really had the opportunity to listen to them much. You know, to me, it was another Dan Vapid project.
Right.
And you know how I feel about Dan Vapid. I think he's one of the best song creators. I love everything he does. I feel like the guy could put out a rap album and I would probably buy it.
He's got that Midas touch
he does.
Of punk rock and roll.
I have not been shy about saying that on this podcast, that I just think he's got it. Yeah, he's got something that just resonates with me. And, you know, I'd heard this music being described in different ways. And so I was like, well, what is it? Is it punk rock? Is it grunge rock? Is it just straight up rock? Is it emo? Like, what the hell is it? And so when I finally got an opportunity to hear this record and hear how good these songs were and just how amazing the sound was for being so old, I mean, so old, you know, but like, you know, something that was recorded in like the 89, you know, 90.
Right.
It had a really good sound to it. I really dug it. To me, it's like a newer record that I'm excited about. I'm excited to get the vinyl.
That's what's exciting. That's great. That, you know, to be able to see the lasting power in something when it can be reintroduced to new people, new generation, almost as something new, and it's able to grab you. You know, it definitely makes for something special.
Absolutely. Well, Jay, I say we get into this interview and welcome Dan, Brian, and Adam to the show. What do you say?
Sounds awesome.
Thank you. So, a welcome to the podcast, Sludgeworth. Let's go down the bench. Who do we have here?
Dan, singer.
Adam White, guitar.
Brian, drums.
Huh. No one wanted last names.
Yeah, we'll just keep it there. Keep it at Brian.
No, we don't get that personal on Talking Records. Right off the bat, is this the record lineup?
Yeah, this is 3 out of 5.
So who are we missing?
We're missing one guitarist, and it was Dave McLean, and the bass player, who's we call Strat.
Very awesome. Well, welcome to the show. We are here to talk about Losers of the Year, the record that just came out again after all this time. So we're going to be excited to kind of dive into that and talk a little bit about the record and getting it back out again on vinyl and all that stuff. But first, before we start that, can you tell us a little bit about Sludgeworth, how the band got started, where you guys were at musically when you started the band?
Brian and I used to play in Screeching Weasel, and we were on tour in 1989. Got back from tour, and we had broken up. I knew I wanted to play in a band. I grew up with Adam. We used to play like in his garage when we were kids. That's a whole nother story. I would love to go into some other time, but it's pretty funny. But like, I started off playing with Adam, and like, I probably went, I don't know, maybe 6 months or maybe a year without seeing Adam. And then we bumped into each other, and I was talking about how I wanted to do a band. And then, I was kind of explaining what I was kind of wanting to do. And then I knew Dave and Stratton, and I also knew Brian, and just kind of, we ended up playing a few times in Adam's basement. And then we ended up going to Brian's house and just started probably like our second, third rehearsal was with Brian. And then we were officially a band. Then at that point, we had a guy that played with us like once, and it was a disaster. And then when Brian came in, and then everything clicked.
To interject, when we were in my mom's basement, Dan was drumming and singing at the same time, just to fill in that little gap.
Oh, remember we had that guy who he played in Unified Field. Remember that?
I don't even remember.
Yeah, yeah.
I just remember you drumming.
Yeah, so he came, and then I'm like, why don't I just ask Brian? Then we did, and then we ended up playing over at Brian's. Brian's like, yeah, we could play in my basement. And so then everything kind of followed from there. So we went from Adam, your basement, to Brian's basement. That was in 1989. And then we were a band for what, 3 years? And then we broke up. I got all that right, guys?
I think so, yeah.
You've often mentioned Naked Ray Gun as an influence. What were some of the bands you guys were listening to at the time that shaped the sound of Sludgeworth? Because it's noticeably different than what you had been working on with Screeching Weasel.
Sure. It and on purpose, I think, you know, it was like Screeching Weasel had, the band had their thing. And then this was trying to go more with like Naked Ray Gun. We all like Jawbreaker. We all like the first Fugazi record. I didn't really like them at all after that album, but I want to say we all like the Descendants. I remember we would just, I don't know, all kinds of stuff, really, like hardcore, like the Bad Brains and just stuff. I don't know. We were just kind of coming from a time when it was just kind of a little newer. You know, that aside from like maybe Naked Ray Gun and the Descendants, just that kind of thing was just like, wasn't really kind of being done as much. Just kind of going with what was around. I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain. I mean, we had a lot of stuff. But we all listened to metal like when we were growing up. And we all got into the punk thing, and then from hardcore. And then from there, like got into like stuff, like I said, like some of the other band, like more like Ray Gun and like Dad Nasty and all kinds of bands.
Agreed.
No Means No.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
very good.
The Wrong record in particular, you know, and I know that, I forgot who brought it to the table, but Sam I Am was pretty big. Got a lot of rounds around the band and stuff like that. So those were some other influences outside of like Ray Gunn and Dag Nasty and Rites of Spring and Bad Brain, all that.
Yeah, Brian, I hear a lot of all that in your sound because it is a pretty good mix of stuff.
You know, and that's kind of the, it's a hard thing to display your influence, but not over display it, I guess. You know what I mean? Like
imitate it. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically rip it off. You know what I mean? but the good thing is that there was so much diversity around it. You know what I mean? It wasn't just Ray Gunn or Dag Nasty or Fugazi. It was like so many other things, you know, that, and you got five people that are bringing different elements all the time, you know, like someone heard, you know, Clutch or that, or, you know, I remember like Dave would mention some bands and Adam too, you know, and then now that was, that's kind of how it was. Cause we were all really young and new music was so exciting and so hard to come by. It wasn't like you just jump on the internet and find it. Like you had to go fucking rock or dig, you know, you might buy like a, and it's a piece of shit, but you paid $1 for it and whatever. But their music wasn't traded so easily as it is now.
Right.
So we would be eats, you know, when it came around.
Now, another thing I always like to bring up too is that, you know, Nirvana had broke at that point, but you know, this was before Green Day had broke or The Offspring or any of those. I mean, we played with a lot of those bands. There was something kind of in the air at that time, you know, like you could, at least I could feel it with Nirvana, and like the punk thing was just kind of building up, especially in the suburbs. Like looking back, like now, like a lot of the times, like if you liked Fugazi or if you liked Naked Raygun or if you liked The Descendants, it wasn't like a big deal, where like now it's like things are so defined, you know, like, usually, like if you liked Fugazi, the tendency is that you probably wouldn't like some other band that we like. I don't know, and we just weren't like that. You know, we just liked it. We just kind of liked a bunch of different stuff, and just I don't mind when bands do it. I mean, I've been in bands that are very well defined like that, but I've never been that guy 100% either. I've always I've always liked all kinds of shit, you know, and I think these guys are the same.
So a band for a short while, but you managed to get a lot of recordings out. And so Losers of the Year is an album, but was it intended to be an album or is it a collection of the music you guys were recording at the time?
It's a collection it's some of the songs that were pre-released and then some of the songs that were, that didn't make it on a full length, because we were starting a full length and then we ended up breaking up, but we had a handful of songs. And so that was kind of like the last thing that we did, was just kind of put them all together.
Almost a best of.
Yeah. It's kind of the way I looked at it. And then like with this new release, you know, Toby from Red Scare was really going, we got to get some, you know, bonus tracks. I said, you know, come to think of it, we did have two that I think might be all right, but I have no idea where they're from, where they're at. Well, somehow he managed to dig them up. I can't even really articulate the story for you. He found it on some ADAT. I don't know if Adam found it, gave it to him.
I heard he contacted Chris Abelgren over at Lookout, and Chris just happened to have it in like the last box that he hadn't checked.
Yes. So it's some wild, right? And ended up, you know, and getting the songs transferred was kind of an ordeal, and then he managed to do it.
Not his DAT machine anymore.
So it's right. So yeah, I mean, because they're from, you know, 30 years ago.
Were you ever like, I wonder where those tapes went? Like, was that like a thing that you thought about over the years, or did you just kind of forget about it?
You know, I knew I had it, but like I've moved so many times, and like it's kind of stupid. Like, I should have that stuff, you know, like that you're supposed to guard that stuff like it's gold. And then like, but of course, over the years, it's just idealistic. It just didn't happen. You know,
Adam's kind of like the archive. Like he keeps a lot of stuff. So I assumed it all went through him.
I'm not a hoarder.
No, I know.
I had it on cassette, and I made I digitized a bunch of cassettes recently, including some old the band Death rehearsals from 1980, whatever it was. So, anyways, when I was doing all that, I digitized a bunch of the Sledgeworth stuff that was supposed to come out, and made it into wave format in the highest possible quality I could. I'm not sure if he used that or if he did find an ADAT or what it was, but I sent him that of those two unreleased songs.
I want to say he found an ADAT. He did. Okay.
Yeah.
There's some wild story that, like, I'm like, well, all right. You managed to get that. You managed to do that. Fucking A. It sounds just like the way I remembered it sounding. That's interesting. You know, because 30 years really is a long time, you know, and it's like kind of like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, it sounds just the way I remember it.
Yeah, there's a funny story about how he wanted to find this DAT machine, but it had to be somebody local because he was not going to stick the tapes in the mail. Like, once he had them, there was no way he was going to let go of them. So he had to find someone local, and luckily he did. So,
yeah, I guess what he was saying to me, like he found somebody to transfer it. And it was like kind of just really lucky that he was able to find anybody like that at all. This day and age, you know,
old tech. Yeah.
Yeah. Old tech.
We were laughing about tech earlier.
I think that's interesting part of this whole re-release is that I don't think that people have any idea what Toby went through. That's a story in and of itself. That's kind of, you know, because otherwise, if
we didn't know it,
So it's pretty amazing that it actually even came, that it even came about, you know.
Thankfully, you know, I mean, I think, upon revisiting it, I was pleased. I thought it was good. Back then I thought it wasn't finished, but you know, listen to it now, I'm like, all the same. I mean, I still think it sounds pretty decent. So it's definitely worth being on there, no doubt. You know.
So you mean there was more you wanted to do with the recordings, but since you couldn't?
Yeah, there was more I wanted to do with the song, but it's fine. You know,
you've forgotten your ideas from 30 years ago anyway.
Yeah.
I don't remember if the verses on To Be the Same, I feel like you weren't 100% on, so we tried the megaphone effect, and I think you liked it a little bit better.
I wanted to get like a bunch of like crazy ass sampling and like just some noisy ass guitars and just some, you know, just kind of work that angle a little more. It didn't kind of work out. I kind of wanted to flush out some of the lyrics a little bit better, but you know, it is what it is. I still think it came out, you know, pretty good for the most part. So yeah.
To Be the Same as one of the bonus tracks that's included on the re-release.
Right.
Going back to, just for a moment, the story of getting the record back out, how long from like when the idea was hatched to re-release it till now, how much time transpired?
I had a guy that wanted to put it out, but he just wasn't very trustworthy. And then, like, it kind of got on Toby's radar. Toby was into doing it, and that was like 5 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, 4 or 5 years ago. It was one of those projects too where I was just like, hey, you know, you get to it when you get to it. I had other things. I think everybody just had stuff going on. The way I looked at it was, it's already been out, so I wasn't really in a rush for it or anything. I wasn't going to press it, but it was a pretty long time. 5 years is a pretty long time, man. Came out well. I'm glad it's out. And it's been really pretty nice seeing, I don't know, I get a lot of people sending me messages and, you know, we've been doing a lot of interviews and, you know, it's all been really good, positive.
I heard another adventurous thing was trying just to find a photo of you guys together.
Yeah. Oh shit.
Well, here's the thing is that, you know, I think they had an email address. Martin from Los Curios is my brother. So he has tons of like old photos. But I tell you the truth, I found out that the record was coming out from my brother just a couple weeks before the record came out. He was like, "Hey, you know that someone's re-releasing the Sludgeworth record?" And I was like, "Oh, no shit." And then when I talked to Adam was like, "Yeah, you know, he had me on like a email thread, but it was a bad email address." And so I didn't know. So I have a lot of old photos and old flyers and a lot of like the old artwork that James O'Barr, who did The Crow, like I have some of that original stuff floating around somewhere.
I want to say I have one too. Like he gave me one from that first 7-inch. Great, great artwork.
Yeah. To have a guy like that doing the artwork for a small Chicago punk band was pretty cool.
Yeah, especially for just flyers and stuff. It was crazy.
Yeah. I had zero feet. Like I would literally like call him up and be like, "Hey man, can you draw up a flyer for me?" Like I wasn't embarrassed or ashamed. Like I just didn't like, what's the worst?
Yes.
Like, no.
Yeah, I mean, he seemed like he was just kind of cool about it. You're like, "Oh yeah, sure, man. I'll do whatever."
He was super.
What do you need, man?
I went out to Detroit and I stayed with him for a few days, and he was super super cool when the movie came about, and Hollywood got a hold of him. That's when things got weird.
he didn't have time for you anymore.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's as far as I'm going to go on that. He's still. Still around, he's still alive, he's still doing things. I think he saw it too, you know, what that industry will do to a but yeah, no, it was cool. We were lucky. And we had, you know, I worked at Kinko's during the midnight shift. And Paul Russell, who did a lot of stuff for Screeching Weasel, I think he did like the cow logo. I think
he did the logo, yeah.
Yeah, and so yes. Paul Russell would come into Kinko's at 3 o'clock in the morning and, you know, work on his stuff, and I'd be like, "Hey, Paul, can you make a flyer for this show or this show?" And he'd sketch it out there, and I print our flyers right there. And
right,
stick them in my back. Go home after work.
It's funny thinking about that. Like Kinko's is like a really big, kind of an important place in like the punk rock scene, you know, because it's like, what would you do without, like back then you had to have some kind of Kinko's access because you had to physically make the flyer and go and hang it up everywhere, you know? so Brian, you like working at Kinko's was actually definitely like a band perk.
It was a band perk for a lot of bands. In fact, I got some Statue of Limitations are gone, but like Smashing Pumpkins would come in to get their flyers made. And I worked the midnight shift, so I'd see their flyer there and I would change the date on it or change the and then hire them up and I'd see them come back the next day and be like, "Oh, you got to redo this." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." And change it again. Like, so either.
Oh, I don't remember that. That's funny.
Oh man,
that's awesome.
That's one of them.
There was always like these punks, and like there'd be a show at Metro, and I'd have to work, but like all these people would come and hang out at Kinko's, and like we in the parking lot and fuck with Smashing Pumpkins flyers.
Yeah,
that's amazing. Yeah, Kinko's was pretty clutch.
That was a good time right there, you know. But
yeah, and it was like a late night place, you know, you would, like you said, like midnight, 1, 2, 3 in the morning, and you're making a freaking flyer for your show. You know what I mean? It's kind of funny thinking about it now, but that's the way it was done, you know? And then you would go and then you would, you know, get some glue and go to a fucking pole and make sure every little square inch of the pole had your fucking, you know?
You know, what's funny is Eric Spicer from Raygun, he worked the day shift. I worked the late night shift. And then he went to do something else after that. But yeah, I thought that was kind of a weird little inbred scene type thing.
I remember him working there too. And yeah, that's just funny. Anyway, I don't know if we're like going on a side road a little too much here, but like Kinko's is just a fun little memory, I think. And
it is
in punk rock history.
Yeah. So you'd make 1,000 flyers, you'd pay for 200 of them, and
none of them. Make 1,000.
None of them. The album was originally released on Lookout, but not on vinyl. Do you remember why there was no vinyl pressed in the early days?
I do not remember at all. So that's really cool. That it's coming out on vinyl. I'm pretty stoked about that. I was just logged into Facebook earlier today and I saw a picture of like a little kid holding one like in her hand, and that's awesome. And it had like a Christmas stocking in the background, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's cool. We don't have our copies yet and they're on their way, but but to answer your question, yeah, man, it is cool to have it on vinyl. I think it's looking forward to having it in my hands, playing it.
You know, it's kind of
just to have that.
The kind of the cool thing about vinyl, my son got a turntable and we got some records. When you listen to vinyl, it's not like you put it on and just like and wash the dog. It's like if you're putting a record on, it's like it seems like now you're listening to it. You're focused on it. You know, if you got something playing off your something, you know, you're doing dishes, taxes, whatever. But it seems like nowadays with the record, you're absorbing it, you know. So I think it's cool.
I don't know, like with you guys, but that was like kind of my experience growing. Well, I mean, Adam and I had a lot of those experiences together, you know, going out and buying records. You remember, Adam?
Yeah.
You know, like just, you know, going to Rolling Stones or Wax Trax, and it was like an all day event. I can remember a couple times where, like, you know, I bought one record, you bought something, and, you know, a couple other guys bought something else, and then we were all listening to them at your house.
Right.
You know, I want to say, like, you know, we did that kind of a lot. I mean, we tape it, you know, I would tape the record around.
Yeah. Nobody could afford to.
That was a big deal. You know what I mean? Like, all right, we're going to make the all day trek to the record store. And I don't know if maybe it's just the way we grew up or something, but you're holding a big, you know, 12-inch vinyl in your hand. You got the cover, you've got the song titles, and you just, like you're saying, Brian, you just get more absorbed into it, you know, and then you actually have to physically flip it to go to the other side and put the needle on the groove. With like a lot of times, like, you know, with digital downloads, you just let it go. People, it's really pretty. It's not the experience. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It has like an experience to it, the vinyl, and it's. I don't know. I think it's kind of cool. You know, I'm not like I'll take music any way I can get it. If it's a digital download, that's fine. CD, if I'm in a car, I listen to it that way. If I'm at home, but vinyl is special, I think, for that reason, because I feel like you are getting kind of a cool little unique experience that I'm kind of glad it came back. And so, yeah, I'm glad that the record is on vinyl where it wasn't before. So,
and especially now, what these labels have to go through to get stuff printed Like, it's like a year. Like, there's like a waiting right. list here, and you know, they're from what I understand, actually, there's actually a local place in Chicago. They're a little more expensive, but you know, most places, Czechoslovakia is like the big producer of vinyl.
Wow.
Yeah. So imagine with that.
That's crazy.
I mean, it's fucking nuts, dude.
Yeah.
So I know that it's not easy. Not easy to. That's why records are so expensive these days. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
Yeah. They are really expensive now.
Yeah. Isn't that wild? Like,
it is wild because, like, you know, when we were originally putting out on Lookout, I don't even think I cared about vinyl at that point anymore. I was like, we're going to have CD. You know what I mean? Well, it's pretty funny. I can remember, like, when we were first band and we got our first record out, and when we had our CD out, I felt like pretty stoked to have a CD out.
Sure.
Because everything was vinyl up until that point. That tells you how old we are, right?
Right.
But it was like pretty exciting to have a CD. And so, like, yeah. So that.
Everything comes around.
Everything does come around, man.
And vinyl back then was like $6-$8.
Yeah.
I don't, for sure. I don't even know what it is. I couldn't even tell you what a vinyl record would cost these days. I know
you go now, like, you can see it for like upward to like $40. Like, yeah.
Some records, yeah. So
they're usually like 30. Remastered. And like, I saw Metallica Ride the Lightning remastered, and it was like, I want to say it was like close to $40. I'm like, fuck, man.
That's crazy.
For full circle, I'm actually excited that Sludgeworth's on streaming for the first time. Like,
wow, there you go.
Yeah.
You know, like
the most modern thing.
Yeah, we had people who were able to buy the album or borrow it from friends or record it from friends or whatever, but it was never available on like Spotify or whatever streaming service you want, or even buying from Apple or whatever. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's true too.
It's actually really cool because prior to that, at work, when it came out, like that day it came out, I listened to it on Amazon Music or something like that. And I was like, oh, it was so cool. Like, just because with that, it's so prevalent that so many different people, you know, they do those things where like, oh, if you're listening to Jawbreaker, it might recommend Sludgeworth. So now, you know, Billy from Buttfuck, Idaho, you know, who had no idea.
Love that guy.
Was.
Yeah, he's great.
You know, now he's hearing and it's like, whoa, now he starts looking for it, you know, so it's a big avenue, you know.
It'll spread, yeah.
Yeah, I hope.
Yeah, I totally get what you mean, too. It's kind of fun to just be able to pick up your phone and kind of punch in the name and then bring it right up on your phone.
Yeah, there it
is. You know what I mean?
It's like,
yeah.
All right.
Especially when it wasn't there before, you know what I mean? We couldn't do that for a long time, and, well, now we can, so that's kind of cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm so glad to hear you guys talk about the involvement that you have in the listening experience with vinyl. We talk a lot about that on this show, Talking Records. We talk a lot about why listening to records is so important to us. And, you know, trying to pinpoint that feeling of being more immersed in the music. You're right. Like, if I put something on and I'm doing the dishes or I'm around the house, I'm not listening to it the same way I am when I'm putting that record
on. No.
So I was glad to hear you guys say that.
No, you're more experiencing the record, I think. And another thing, too, is like records back then were written for that, too. Is like, okay, side A, side B, you know. Funny thing is, I still think that way when I make a record, but I'm not sure if a lot of people do, and it might just because it's an old habit that, like, I just never really gave up because I like it maybe or something, but like I try to like think of things in terms of side A and side B, even like,
right, you need the song that kicks off side A, and then you need another good song at number 6 to kick off side B or whatever.
Right, even though it's a CD.
Yeah, right. You know what? This is called Talking Records, and I'm going to tell you. And it's funny because you guys are talking about these records, and I'm thinking like the best record to listen to have an experience was fucking Crass Record, because you got like an entire. There was so much to look at. The whole record would play, and you didn't even get through this massive booklet of art and politics and.
Those records were kind of like, they were kind of mind blowing a little bit. You're like, what? You're like, really? And the artwork was just fucking insane.
Yeah,
it's
that experience though. Like that was like,
right.
You're
to just stare at it. Yeah,
you're sitting down. Right. You're not just going to listen to it. You're hanging out with that record for a little bit.
Right.
You're investing.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Feeding of the 5,000 right now, and it's just got so much. It's like a Where's Waldo. You're just going to sit and listen to this record and like run your eyes across this thing for a half hour. It's pretty amazing. So the record is now out, and you're hoping it spreads around. Is there any plans to get together and play some shows?
We're talking about it. We're trying to make it happen.
You know, it was brought up, and, you know, a lot of time has gone by. And so it was hard to kind of gauge where everybody was. And then Adam had started this, I guess it's like a group phone where everybody was in, and there's a lot of excitement. So I'm going to leave it at, there's a lot of excitement about live shows.
Yes. I think it will probably happen. I tend to think it will.
Yeah.
And when we know, you know, you guys will know, and you know, we'll be looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be great to get out and play these songs. And so, Dan, I have a question for you. When you play these songs, you have like a different vocal delivery for Sludgeworth. You kind of have to get in that zone, or what?
Yeah.
You're
totally right, man. And I'll tell you another thing. It's not just that vocal delivery. It's having to just sing without a guitar strapped to me, because I got nothing to hide behind. You see, I got to figure out how to do this shit again. Yeah, it's been scary. A long time since I used to like jump around and I don't know, jump off kick drums and shit like that. You know what I mean? And I'm way out of practice with that stuff. So, you
better start some yoga.
Yeah. No, I know.
I do.
This is going to be interesting if we get to that point. But yeah, it'll come back. A lot of this is like riding a bike, you know. Even like I said, like listening to Be the Same, it's just boom. It was right there. As like it just happened yesterday. Even though I can't remember what I even did yesterday, I can remember like. To Be the Same from like 30 years ago, like it was just the other day. I don't know. That's weird. Music's a weird thing, man. And I'm a totally. Weird guy.
It's like muscle memory. It'll come right back. Yeah, it's like no time has passed.
yeah, absolutely.
You know what's funny about that too? It's because we've done shows in the past. I think we did 4 shows, and I remember the first time that we were going to do a show and we got to rehearsal, it was terrible. You know what I mean? Like just because there's rust, there's muscle memory. You don't, how did I play that? Like, but that was literally one practice. Next practice, it was pretty much dead nuts. And then it went up from there. So I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm probably going to have to do a lot of singing around the house,
you know,
with the record on to try to get back into that the swing of that vocal delivery. But I'll get it.
Yeah, you got to channel your inner Hetfield.
Yeah, there you go.
The inner there Hetfield. Are a couple of yas on there.
That's right.
I was going to ask you guys if you could remember, what were some of the songs that you really enjoyed playing from this record? Any standouts that like you see on the set list and you're like, all right.
I like that whole record, except for like maybe one or two of them. Even those I do like. I mean, I don't know if I have a particular favorite. I don't know. Do you guys? Maybe I kind of like Nearest One to Stand Behind kind of a lot.
I like that a lot. I like.
I might go with that one, but then there's like a lot of other little ones. I don't know. I don't really. And then there's other songs I just kind of like for live reasons too, just because I don't know, like you stick the mic out in the crowd or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of fun for me, you know. So it has that, you know, some of the like the sing along parts.
The interaction, yeah.
Yeah, the interaction I kind of like. So like say like a song like Someday or something, that's kind of fun for me to kind of interact that way. I don't know. There's I'd probably say like, yeah, those are probably the ones that stick out the most with that.
You know, it's funny because like on the record, I like Follow, but just it was the reaction from the crowd when you play live. That's like, made that song a lot of fun to play. I mean, you would just see like a lot of bouncing, you know what I mean? From where I was seated, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that made it a lot of fun.
Except for the guy that was standing up front that took out a newspaper, started reading it.
Oh, Bill from Buttfuck, Idaho.
Starts yawning.
You guys suck.
I kid. Although I have played shows where people started scrolling their phones and like looking around the room. You ever been in that situation?
You're playing like, a pop with the mic stand.
Yeah, no kidding.
Put your phone away.
We did not get that.
We
really got good responses as a band back then. I have to say they were always like pretty much always off the hook. So I'm kind of happy to look back at that.
Yeah, we played a lot of good shows.
We did.
We played a lot of shows.
We did play a lot of shows, and they were always really well received. About every time. And the only time I can think
except
of maybe
that tour
was maybe and maybe the time we played with Killing tour? Joke. I can remember that was a little dead, but I remember none of us really cared.
No, I don't remember the response to us because I was just excited to see Killing Joke.
Yeah.
But I do remember when we played in Pittsburgh on that tour.
Yeah.
Two people there, and one of them was from Chicago.
Oh, God.
Was there two people there? I thought we... Okay. Yeah, there was some small turnouts. That was the other thing with this band is that we really did really well locally. And then we went out on tour a couple of times and it was pretty dead when we would go out on tour. But we always had a really good time when we went on tour as well. I don't know. It's just some really, really fun times. I remember a lot of one tour, we were like playing baseball for like a couple of days because we had a couple of days off.
And Joe King's place.
Yeah. So that was like super fun, you know.
I have a tour story, and you guys have to read. We were in Philly, and I wasn't old enough to be in the venue when the show was happening, but they said, hey, listen, there's this band that's going to play before you guys. They're on some festival. And it was Tool. And it was Tool. And Tool, so Tool opened up for us in Philly.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I remember that.
Yep.
That's funny.
Yeah.
It's a good one to have.
They were really good, but yeah, it was weird. I'd never heard of
it. It was weird. It was kind of I'm like, all right, what's going on here? Like,
yeah.
I didn't know who they were or anything, time or.
Yeah.
No, I remember this truck, like, because I couldn't go in the club, and like this like truck pulls up, and there's unknown equipment. I'm like, damn, like, this band's got a lot of equipment.
Right, right.
I mean, I had no idea what a tool was, you know. So it was kind of wild.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, every band has to start somewhere, so that's funny.
Yeah.
It's a good story.
Yeah, they're a great opener.
They brought lots of people in.
We got an Instagram account today.
I saw that.
We're in the 21st century.
Now you got to post stuff.
Yeah. So
that's the hard part.
I know it is the hard part. You're right about that.
Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us tonight and telling us a little bit about the record and the backstory and getting it back out again. This was a lot of fun talking records with you and live shows. Yeah. So thanks again. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Cheers.
Awesome. All right. Well, there you have it, folks. Hanging out with Sludgeworth, hanging out with Mr. Jay Prozak. That was a lot of fun, Jay. Thanks for hanging out.
Oh, I had a blast. Thanks for having me. And, you know, I kind of played the fly on the wall on this one, and it was, I just kind of really, really enjoyed listening to everyone speak and listening to you as a new fan. I didn't want to get all fanboy because I think I could have done that very easily. So I thought it was great just watching you go through it from a fresh start.
Yeah. I could have just listened to the three of them talk. I feel like, you know, why ask the questions? Just let them talk. It was great to hear their stance on, you know, record collecting and playing live gigs and, you know, the band and coming back to the band all these years later. It was really, really cool to hear.
Well, it's just awesome seeing, you know, how genuine it all is.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely genuine. I would like to thank the guys from Sludgeworth for hanging out with us tonight. I'd like to thank Katie Hovland for connecting me with Sludgeworth. I would like to thank a lot of people, these thank yous. You know, I'd like to thank Toby for getting this record back out into the world. I would like to thank you, Jay, for introducing me to a lot of these groups, Sludgeworth, the Mopes. I really owe you a lot in this realm of punk rock. So you're an important step along that path for me. So,
well, hey, thank you for letting me be involved and for all that you do, because you do a lot. all these aspects of the punk rock. Thanks, and music. You're a awesome wealth of knowledge. Eager to learn.
I would like to thank Chris DeMix from Less Than Jake for the theme music. And of course, I would like to thank all of you for listening, for tuning in, whether you're a Sludgeworth fan or whether you wanted to learn about something new that you weren't familiar with. One of the things we love to do on this show is introduce things, talk about things, get into things so that maybe you get into it too, right? We appreciate when you listen. So thank you. Thanks for checking us out on social media. Make sure you check out Sludgeworth, Losers of the Year. Red Scare Records has your vinyl. Check it out on Spotify. Find it on Apple Music. Find it on any place, everywhere, right? It's out there. It's in the world. Check it out. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Jay, it's good to hang out with you tonight.
I had a great time, Jed. Thank you.
Cool, man. See you next time.
Rock and roll.